During an IRGC Navy drill in the Persian Gulf, Major General Salami warns any threat against the Iranian islands will meet a crushing response. The assault on democracy was fueled by lies. That is what U.S. Special Counsel has said while announcing a third indictment of former President Donald Trump. Also coming up, Moscow says it could go back to the expired grain deal with Ukraine as soon as the West meets its obligations regarding Russia's part of the deal. Thanks for joining us. The Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, has launched military drills in the Persian Gulf, the aim of increasing readiness to defend Iranian islands. The maneuvers are also aimed at displaying the IRGC's naval power. Various units taking part in the drills that include combat, missile, drone, navy, and other units. The exercises kicked off early on Wednesday on the Iranian island of Bu Musa, with the country's military top brass in attendance. The chief commander of the IRGC addressed the drills. Major General Hossein Salami warned any threat against Iran will draw a decisive response from the armed forces.
Iranians are vigilant. Iran will respond to all threats, complex conspiracies, mysterious scenarios, and malicious plots. We will give them such a response that would make them regret their deeds.
The IRGC chief commander stressed that Iran is determined to defend its territorial integrity in every corner of the country. Salami also rejected any foreign presence in the region. He said regional countries themselves are able to maintain their security. The general noted that foreign policies adopted by the U.S. and Israel have brought the region insecurity, war, instability, and division. Legal trouble is piling up for the former U.S. President Donald Trump. The ex-Republican president faces criminal charges for a third time in 4 months. Charges pertain to Trump's efforts to overturn his 2020 election defeat to the incumbent President Joe Biden. The four-count indictment alleges that Trump conspired to defraud the U.S. by preventing Congress from certifying Biden's victory. The charges stem from the election probe led by special counsel Jack Smith. He has accused the former president of spreading lies about his election loss.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding. The attack on our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
We love you.
Trump has been ordered to make an initial appearance in federal court. His campaign called the indictment a political persecution reminiscent of Nazi Germany. Trump supporters attacked the U.S. Capitol in January 2021. They wanted to stop Congress from certifying Biden's victory. Trump's now campaigns to regain the presidency next year. No other U.S. president, current or former, has ever faced criminal charges. President Vladimir Putin says that Moscow is ready to return to the Black Sea grain deal as soon as the West meets its obligations regarding Russia's grain and fertilizer exports. Putin made the announcement during a phone call with his Turkish counterpart, Recep Tayyip Erdogan. He stressed further extension of the deal would be meaningless given the lack of progress in the implementation of the Russian part of the deal. The Black Sea grain deal, brokered by Turkey and the UN in July of last year, aimed to relieve a global food crisis amid the Ukraine war. The UN was to help Russia with its exports in return for the safe export of Ukrainian grain during the war. Russia exited the deal last month as none of its demands have been met. Ukrainian authorities have declared an air raid alert across the country as Russia launches fresh drone strikes on the capital, Kiev, and the port city of Odessa. Kiev's mayor and military officials said air defenses shot down a number of Russian drones over the capital. The fall of drone wreckage reportedly caused damage to multiple districts, including busy Solomyansky, which hosts an international airport. Earlier, officials warned residents to stay in shelters. The southern Odessa region was also targeted. That caused damage to its port and set some grain silos on fire. There were no reports of casualties in either incident. Russia and Ukraine have recently conducted several drone attacks on each other. On Tuesday, Russian air defenses shot down several drones over the Moscow region, with one hitting a tower that was struck for the second time this week. The Tunisian President Kais Saied has appointed a new prime minister, the third in this position in less than 3 years.
Good luck in this responsibility that you will bear during this particular situation. There are great challenges that we must tackle with solid determination and a strong will.
Ahmed Hachani, a former director at Tunisia's central bank, has replaced Najla Bouden, who served 2 years in the post. The power transition comes amid a deepening economic and social crisis in the country. Tunisians have held numerous anti-government protests to vent anger at political situation, high unemployment, and rising inflation. In recent weeks, the president has repeatedly blamed officials for the crises, saying that they must act to address problems and poor public services, including frequent water and electricity cuts. Saied took control of almost all powers in July 2021. He then sacked the government, froze the country's parliament in a move his critics described as a coup. Booker Nessa is a deputy chairperson of the Communist Party of Kenya who joins us from Nairobi. Welcome to the program. When you take a look at what has happened, this is the third time that the PM is being replaced. It seems like the president is trying to thwart off any unsuccessful attempts at fixing the economy onto the prime minister by constantly changing it. Maybe the problem is himself, because he is pretty much ruled by decree based on the power grab that occurred in that country. Could he be the source of the problem?
Thank you very much. I think these events that are taking place in Tunisia has to be looked at from their historical perspective. Remember, one of the countries that was affected with the Arab Spring was Tunisia. So the president would like only to demonstrate that he seems to be doing something, and the problem that is facing the African nation, Tunisia, it has nothing to do with him, but the people that he has appointed as the prime, you know, the prime position, the prime minister. So indeed, it also confirmed our analysis from the Communist Party of Kenya that the main problem affecting Africa is actually hypercapitalism, which is not really an internal problem of Tunisia. Because if you look at the Tunisian economy, which was by and large being propped by tourism, and then, of course, since the Arab Spring, it nosed down a bit. But until the Tunisian authority look at the problems facing their country as part of the global crisis, especially if you have an economy of Tunisia, like many African countries, that is looking outward. In fact, the main issue that must be addressed in our own perspective is the systemic failure, the neocolonial system, because the Tunisian authority are basically not answerable to the Tunisian people at the moment, especially President Saied himself. He's basically under the command of the dominance class, mainly in the Western Hemisphere, who has an interest always to destabilize the African countries. So until the Tunisian authority stop looking at their problems from the people who hold those offices and try to address the systemic failures of the neocolonial system that continue to still dominate the Tunisian people today, then he can postpone the problem, but he will definitely not solve this problem through just changing people in those offices. We just need them to have a change of policy. For a fact, if you want to, for example, employ your people, you will not employ your people through free enterprising. You will have to, empower the state to start a deliberate effort, for example, in terms of food production, mechanization of agriculture, and you start a direct a policy towards industrialization and look at the people that are being affected in Tunisia, not as a burden to your government, but as a resource that the Tunisian government can use to fast-track pro-people development.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Booker. Yes, Deputy Chairperson, Communist Party of Kenya from Nairobi. Thank you. Moving on, the first military planes carrying European nationals evacuated from Niger have landed in France and in Italy. The aircraft, carrying hundreds of nationals, landed in Paris and Rome early on Wednesday. More Europeans will be evacuated from Niger in the coming days. Evacuations are taking place following a military coup in Niger last week. There are now fears of a wider conflict in West Africa's Sahel region. Italy says it will help nationals from other countries leave Niger as well.
There are American citizens. There are also European passengers and non-European foreigners whom we managed to bring out of Niger and ensure their safety.
Anti-Western sentiments run high in Niger in the wake of the military coup there. At the weekend, protesters attacked the French embassy in the capital Niamey. They demanded all Western forces, including those of France, to leave their country. Coup leaders have accused France of intervening in Niger's internal affairs. They have warned against any foreign military intervention to reinstate the president. Mali and Burkina Faso have also said that they would consider any regional intervention in Niger to be a declaration of war. Meanwhile, Niger has begun reopening borders with several of its neighbors. China is still reeling from days of torrential rain that caused deadly floods and pummeled the country's northern parts, including the capital Beijing. At least 11 people are confirmed dead and 13 missing after rainstorms brought by Typhoon Doksuri lashed Beijing over the past several days. Authorities have also evacuated over 100,000 people in Zhuzhou, a city in Hebei province. Thousands of emergency personnel have been dispatched to the affected areas, while police helicopters are dropping emergency supplies to residents who remain trapped. The torrential rain is said to be the heaviest since records began 140 years ago. President Xi Jinping has called for thorough search and rescue efforts. The finance ministry has also announced that it would allocate $15 million for the Beijing-Tianjin-Hebei region. An Iraqi woman who went viral on social media attempting to save a Quran from desecration in Denmark has been identified. Quds al-Samarai says that she suffered injuries during the confrontation with two far-right elements and was later arrested on theft charges. Rob Carter has traveled to Denmark to meet with al-Samarai and has filed this report.
The Arab woman who took on two far-right activists in a bid to save a Quran from desecration in Denmark has been identified. Iraqi-Danish citizen Quds al-Samarai risked her own life while en route to visit a friend on Monday, the 24th of July. The footage of the incident, which occurred outside Iraq's embassy, went viral on social media. The video clearly shows Quds grabbing the Quran before being wrestled to the ground by the two men. In one instance, one of the desecrators can be seen with his hands reaching for her neck. Police later arrested Quds on accusations she was stealing the Quran from the activists. Quds explained how the incident left her with minor injuries, but no regrets.
Here the police dragged me, and the man was shouting that I stole his property. I think he was scared because he knew hitting me was wrong, so he had to justify it by saying I stole. As soon as the police heard the word stealing, they immediately put me in handcuffs and gave him back the Quran. The police asked me what happened. I said I saw our Quran being burned, and I just wanted to put it out. And then I saw another Quran with shoes on it, and I wanted to take the shoe off. But I didn't realize that the shoe was nailed on the Quran. I told the police they hit me and strangled me, but they replied with, it's their freedom of speech. So I replied, okay. So it's also my freedom of speech to protect the Quran. I thought the police to help me, but they turned out to twist the story by saying I was trying to steal.
Goods now faces a day in court, while her injuries have left her struggling to walk. Meanwhile, Muslims across the world remain in a state of anger as calls for serious action and retaliation to Europe's defense of far-right hate speech continues.
Despite Copenhagen officially condemning the incident which occurred just where we stand outside Iraq's embassy a few days ago, that doesn't mean that they've outlawed the practice. And according to reports, several other similar incidents have already occurred since, with far-right activists again targeting the diplomatic buildings of Muslim-majority nations here in the Danish capital. However, this has come at a price. Denmark's defense of the so-called free speech of far-right activists to attack Islam's holy sanctities has led to both Denmark and Sweden's reputation to plummet across the Muslim world. Questions should surely be asked now whether it is indeed within the diplomatic interests of European countries to defend such a fringe extremist practice when, of course, there is so much at stake with economic backlashes from the Muslim world. Robert Carter, Copenhagen.
And that is it for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Every hegemonic currency system has its day of collapse. It is the US itself that sets off the inevitable trend of the end of the dollar dominance, which may be what many American strategists and economic pundits are worried about. The hegemony of the US dollar is seriously challenged by the rise of the Chinese yuan and by Washington's failed attempt to wreck the Russian economy by weaponizing the greenback. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Business Insider noted, numerous headlines have flashed the warning in recent days that China is pushing for its currency to replace the US dollar as the world's reserve currency of choice. NPR asked in June, as it pitted China as a top contender against the greenback, the US dollar conquered the world. Is it at risk of losing its top spot? Move over, US dollar. China wants to make the yuan the global currency, the Washington Post reported in May. The yuan versus dollar narrative is often part of a broader call for de-dollarization, primarily from emerging nations, some of whom are sanctioned. Though the euro is still the world's second most commonly held currency after the dollar, the European Central Bank reported. Meanwhile, the Chinese currency is in fourth place after the Japanese yuan. Business Insider added, at the Chinese Communist Party's Congress, which it holds once every 5 years, in October 2022, China's leader Xi Jinping touted his vision of what analysts call Fortress China to be economically independent and insulate the country from external shocks. This push accelerated after other nations hit Russia with sweeping sanctions. A report the Chinese leader delivered to the Congress said, mechanisms for countering foreign sanctions, interference, and long-arm jurisdiction will be strengthened. This was an explicit call to boost the PRC's sanctions-busting mechanisms. Rory Green, the chief economist for China at the London-based macroeconomic forecasting consultancy T.S. Lombard, wrote in an April note seen by Insider titled Death of the Dollar. In April this year, Xi again raised China's goal of yuan internationalization in Kuishi magazine, a Chinese Communist Party journal. In Kuishi, Xi said that China was committed to promoting yuan internationalization in an orderly manner. According to Tasnim News Agency, the use of national currencies and reducing reliance on the U.S. dollar will be on the agenda of the BRICS summit in Johannesburg. And that was according to South Africa's diplomat in charge of BRICS relations, Anil Suklal. South Africa, being the current chair of the BRICS group, will be hosting the summit in Johannesburg on August 22nd to 24th. Suklal explained that the BRICS nations, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, will discuss using national currencies and reducing reliance on the U.S. dollar. He was quoted by Reuters as saying, "There has never been talk of a BRICS currency. It's not on the agenda. What we have said and we continue to deepen is trading in local currencies and settlement in local currencies." Recently, Russian news outlet RT claimed that the BRICS nations will announce a gold-backed common currency at the August summit. However, Leslie Mastrop, vice president and chief financial officer of the New Development Bank, also known as the BRICS Bank, stated that the economic bloc has no immediate plan to launch a currency to compete with the U.S. dollar, noting that the distinction between de-dollarization efforts and the creation of a common BRICS currency, he stressed, the development of anything alternative is indeed a medium to long-term ambition. Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov have championed the concept of a common currency as the BRICS nations endeavor to counter Western dominance in global finance, Bitcoin.com reported. This followed heavy financial sanctions the West placed on Russia after the outbreak of crisis in Ukraine. The U.S. and its allies have frozen about $300 billion in Russian central bank assets, promoting many countries to seek alternatives to the U.S. dollar. According to RT, IMF has recently warned that the share of dollar in global reserves has been lowest in 28 years. Experts say the freezing of Russia's forex holdings has accelerated de-dollarization around the world. The process of diversifying away from the greenback by countries around the world is gathering pace, according to the latest data from the International Monetary Fund. The statistics tracked by the Washington-based institution show that the dollar's share of official gold and foreign currency reserves dropped to a nearly three-decade low of 58% in the first quarter of 2022. The move has reportedly been gradual, and the dollar share of central banks' foreign reserves is now nearly down to a level last seen in 1995. The long-standing status of the dollar as the world's dominant currency has been steadily eroded in recent years amid concerns over soaring U.S. debt and widely implemented sanctions using the currency as leverage. The shift was more pronounced when adjusted for exchange rates, according to Stephen Jen, CEO of Eurozone SLJ Capital Limited, as quoted by Reuters. He said what happened in 2022 was a very sharp plummeting in the dollar share in real terms, calling the decline a reaction to the freezing of half of Russia's $640 billion in gold and FX reserves. According to Jen, the drastic step sparked a rethink in countries like Saudi Arabia, China, India, and Turkey about diversifying their reserves to other currencies. The yuan's share of global over-the-counter forex transactions has increased from nearly zero 15 years ago to 7%, according to the Bank for International Settlement, BIS. After the move against Russia, other currencies are questioning what if you fall on the wrong side of sanctions. BNY Mellon strategist Jeffrey Yu told the media. He said global central banks are currently seeking to diversify their assets, scooping up corporate debt, tangible assets such as real estate and other currencies. Mark Tinker, managing director of Taka Fund Hong Kong, told the agency, "This is the process that is underway. The dollar is going to be used less in the global system."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
Brothers and sisters, the title of our series of lectures is Karbala, the Enlightened Journey. So in order to make our discussion practical, I want to give two examples. I want to fast forward to our current time. You heard about the position in the Jahiliyyah of what we call Hamiyatul Jahiliyyah, this type of bigotry. This type of, you know, blind sort of support to one's tribal values. What is a modern form of this type of bigotry and blindness? It comes in the form, one of the forms of it is in blind and misplaced patriotism. Now, patriotism itself is a very interesting term. Nationalism and patriotism, these are interesting ideologies. Sometimes they can be very useful, and sometimes they can be commendable. For example, you know, we know that there are people who, when they consider themselves as part of a certain community or a certain, let's say, city or a certain country, it spurs them to action. Why? Because they say that this is me, and I have a certain role to play in the global arena. I want to make sure I represent. So let's say, for example, I am from the city of London and I have a chance to show what Londoners or Londonites, what they're about when it comes to the rest of the country. Right? So I go and out of this passion for wanting to prove what I'm like then and what we're about, then we go and we serve, we help, and we shine. That's something which is positive. Our Islamic teachings tell us that a type of nationalism or a type of identity which spurs us to have love for one another and we take care of each other's needs, that is something which is positive. However, there is a type of blind patriotism that can lead somebody down the wrong path and they can end up making decisions which are far from the path of righteousness and justice. And this is what we have to be careful about. If you look at the history of nationalism, brothers and sisters, historically, nationalist ideologies were promoted as a replacement for religion, right? If we go back to what we talked about yesterday in terms of the history of what happened in the West here, there was a time back in, let's say, the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, where even 1900s, the nationalism was being promoted as a way to replace religion. Citizenship was being promoted as a way to replace the bonds that religion ties us with. So let's say, for example, I, as a Muslim, I'm asked that if you had to make a choice where you wanted to support American values and American ideology versus Muslim values and Muslim ideology, which one would you choose? Now, of course, we're not talking about doing things that are outside of the law. We know that we have to do things. But at the same time, the law gives us a right to have freedom and a right to have a position. And maybe if the mainstream has a certain position and values, I have the right to disagree. So let's say I had a choice between whether I'm going to take a stance which is American Muslim or Muslim American. Which one would I choose? Well, I would say that, look at Americanism, right, is a new type of ism that was developed as a way to take people away from religion. The idea of taking a position just because I'm a citizen of a country is a new ideology that was developed to take people away from the bonds of religion and that identity. And so when it comes to trying to determine a position of what I should do, I'm going to first dissect and look at that position from the perspective of Islam. Because I see Islam as being that criteria which tells me what's truth and what's falsehood. And I am going to call a spade a spade. I'm not going to somehow put glasses on my eyes and not see the truth and be blinded just out of whatever love I might have for my country. This is very important. Am I Muslim American or American Muslim? Now, I might say that sometimes it's just a playing of words. But sometimes those words and the order of the words are very important. Am I a Shia who is British? Or am I a British Shia? Even these words can make a difference as well. That what does it mean if I put one before the other? And it's very important for us to realize, brothers and sisters, that these terminologies can be used in different ways. We have to be sensitive to that. We have to be accepting of that. Alhamdulillah, the people who live in different parts of the world, Muslims, followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, they are appreciated so much by those who live in the homelands. Sometimes when I talk to my teachers, when I talk to the scholars who are mid-level or even senior level, if I have an opportunity to communicate with them, and I share with them the efforts that take place for education, for tarbiyah, for majalis, for propagation of the faith, for publication, for so many other things, for building organizations, for welfare, they're just bewildered. They're like, all these things happening from those countries, and they're very impressed. And sometimes they say that whatever we do is for you, so that we can help and support you. But at the same time, we also have to understand that sometimes there can be forms of deviation from the truth. For example, we're told in history that there are times where definitely, in the name of creating division among Muslims, those who are at war with Muslims have used religion itself to create those divisions. Whether it be divisions between Shias and Sunnis, whether it be divisions between Shias and Shias, right? Whether it be divisions between people of the book, right? This happens. We have to be aware of these different things. And when we come to different terminologies, American Islam, British Shiism, Shia, British, all these different things, we have to be wary. We have to have insight as to the origin of these. That's point number one. Point number two, inshallah, I will mention and then move to the Masaib, is that we talked about how in the new Jahiliya that was there at the time of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that was based on the Murja'a ideology, that now people were comfortable taking a position of neutrality. Brothers and sisters, Can we find a parallel of that in our current times? When you have this type of approach to values and morals, which is based on relativism. What does it look like? It looks like this, that, you know, you do what you do. Different strokes for different folks. As long as it's good with you, it's good with you. If it's good for me, it's good for me. God will judge me, but you do not judge me. And many other combinations and permutations of these type of phrases. You hear these, right? It's something which is common. And the root of it, brothers and sisters, is a serious logical error, right? What is a logical error? It's one where those who say that there is no truth that we can latch onto are actually defeating themselves in their own proposition. Because they're stating as truth what cannot be true. It's self-defeating. There is no concept of absolute relativism. You have to start from some point if you want to build something. You can't build something on nothing. And so those who claimed at that time, they said that we're going to take a position where we're not with Imam Ali alayhi salam and we're not with Muawiyah. Actually, they did take a position. You know what that position was? It was a position based on their own nafs. It said that I'm going to do things to serve myself. And sometimes, brothers and sisters, we as parents, we as teachers, we as educators, we as older brothers and sisters, we might be influenced by the society we're in and we think that we need to water down our Islam in order to make it appealing to the young generation. We need to take Islam and empty it out of its values. Take away hijab, take away iffah, take away modesty, take away amr bi'ma'ruf nahi an munkar, take away ta'abbud, take away all these beautiful concepts of Islam. And empty it out and just make it be a personal religion of being a good person. And that's the way I'm going to have my child accept Islam. That's what will make it attractive. On the contrary, what actually makes Islam beautiful and attractive and appealing is when it takes a stance in this world of relativity. It says that, no, I am going to base myself on absolute morals and values which come from the absolute one. Allah is the haq, and what comes from Him is the haq. And there is haq, there is truth. And that haq can be found and it can be achieved. Now, of course, there's a way and there's a methodology, there's an approach we can take to parent, to connect. Inshallah, in the upcoming nights, I want to bring up those practical discussions of the best practices. But we shouldn't let go of our position in the name of wanting to appeal when actually we are causing people to go away and say that Islam has nothing there. Remember the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says that there will come a time when people will try to empty Islam from its values the way you take a glass and you empty of its contents. That is not the way that we want to go.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Rahi Kareemun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyum
وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the Limelight.
There has been growing concerns among British charities and campaigners that with the cost of living crisis continuing to rage, increasing numbers of British people are turning to often expensive forms of credit to cover everyday spending and expenses such as food, housing and fuel. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. New data showed personal loan rates have doubled in little more than 18 months, spelling far higher costs for financially squeezed households hoping to borrow money. In early December 2021, just before official interest rates began their seemingly relentless march upwards, someone with a good credit rating who was looking for a new £5,000 personal loan to be paid back over 36 months would have potentially been able to access Best Buy rates starting at 3.3% from companies such as Sainsbury's Bank and the AA. Fast forward to this week and Best Buy rates for the amount and loan term started at 6.6% from Sainsbury's Bank. However, in many cases, the top rates have more than doubled. Several loan providers have been offering rates below 3.5% in December of 2021 are now offering rates at 7.2% and even higher. Also, the rate someone is offered will depend on their personal circumstances, so many people will be asked to pay a rate that is considerably higher than these Best Buy rates. However, even based on a previous and new Best Buy rate of 3.3% and 6.6% respectively, that means new customers who can now access these rates are having to shell out an extra £267 in interest rates over 36 months for the same debt. The numbers were compiled for Guardian Money by Andrew Hager at the personal finance website Moneycombs. Andrew Hager says, people hoping to borrow money via a personal loan or credit card are facing far higher costs since this cycle of 13 consecutive interest rate rises kicked off back in December of 2021. He adds, rates for Best Buy loans have doubled, so changing the car or home improvement borrowing is now far more costly and at a time where consumer budgets are already stretched to bursting point. In Britain, there has been growing concern among charities and campaigners that with the cost of living crisis continuing to range, increasing numbers of British people are turning to often expensive forms of credit to cover their everyday spending and expenses, such as food, housing and fuel. According to new figures from the Money Charity, the average credit card debt a British household stood at £2,350 in May of this year. That was up from £2,197 a year earlier and £1,938 in May of 2021. The most recent data from the Bank of England revealed that the average interest rate on the credit cards hit a record high of 20.44% in May. Some loan providers have been pushing through fairly chunky rate rises lately. Some John Lewis partnership cardholders have just been told that their purchase rate will rise from 20.72% to 24.49% from 30th of September this year. Credit card rates are variable, although in many cases they are not explicitly linked to the base rate. However, the MoneyComs data shows that the rate has definitely been creeping up. In December of 2021, several of the leading players, including Barclaycard and HSBC, had interest rates for purchases of 21.9% for new customers. Andrew Hager says, in recent days, these stood at 24.9% and 23.9% respectively. He adds that the credit card rate examples above apply to new customers, but that, unfortunately, the reality will have been even worse for some existing cardholders whose rates are linked to the base rate. Andrew Hager says, it's a case of roles reversed, with savers now enjoying decent returns for once, while borrowers have seen cheap money deals simply disappear. The most recent Bank of England data also stated that the average rate on new personal loans to individuals stood at 8.27% in May. Meanwhile, a typical overdraft rate is now just a little over 21%. The British newspaper The Daily Mirror has also covered the same story and tells us more. Almost 8 million British people are thought to be teetering on the edge of a financial cliff. Consumer group Which? Warned of a debt time bomb after household bills rocketed. The families it classes as drained and desperate earned less than £20,000 and cut back to skipping meals. But Which? Also has concerns about their anxious and at-risk group, which accounts for 7.9 million adults. These tend to be from large families, have children and have managed to stay afloat by using credit. Which says they are much more likely now to have borrowed money to maintain basic living standards rather than limit food and energy. But with interest rates still rising, they may soon start struggling. Almost 40% of this group has a mortgage or loan on their home. A fifth of those with a mortgage are on a variable tracker mortgage, meaning their rates are hiked every time the Bank of England base rate rises. One woman from Northern England said, I have to use credit to make ends meet and I do worry about debt. I have no safety net for emergencies and I will have to work past state pension age. Rocío Concha, Director of Policy and Advocacy at Which? Said, until now, the British government and policymakers claimed they have focused on supporting the millions already failing to make ends meet. But this ancient and at-risk group is a ticking time bomb. Rocío Concha added, they are far more likely to have relied on borrowing, but with the interest rates continuing to rise, it's only a matter of time before they find themselves facing serious hardship. The government must help those most in need by tightening regulation on buy now, pay later loans and ensuring businesses are doing everything they can to ease pressure on household finances. The website of This Is Money has also reported on the same story. Britain's mortgage lender saw an increase in the number of customers defaulting on their loans in the 3 months to the end of June and expect more borrowers to miss payments in the coming months. Lenders' responses to the Bank of England's credit conditions survey revealed a 30% increase in mortgage defaults in the second quarter of this year. This was an increase compared with the 3 months to March, when the proportion of missed payments increased by 14%. lenders expect defaults to increase again in the third quarter as rising interest rates and inflation continue to batter British households and its finances. Stephen Perkins, managing director at broker Yellow Brick Mortgages, said, "They're already rising, but lenders are expecting losses and default rates on secured loans to increase even further in the next quarter, which is unsurprising given the heights that interest rates are now reaching." Stephen Perkins added, "Demand for credit is also expected to fall in the third quarter, which again is what you would expect in such a brutal economic climate." He added, "Repeated increases to the Bank of England's base rate have done nothing to curb inflation and are massively impacting the economy and pushing millions of British families' finances beyond the brink."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The viewpoints of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the tragedy of Karbala. In the Holy Quran, Allah the Exalted mentions the names of two women as perfect examples of faith. God also mentions the names of two women as examples of infidelity. Allah sets forth for an example to the unbelievers, the wife of Noah and the wife of Lut. They were respectively under two of our righteous servants. The Holy Quran, Surah 66, Ayah 10. These two women exemplify infidelity. That is to say, Allah the Exalted mentions women, not men, as examples of both infidelity and faith. And Allah sets forth as an example to those who believe the wife of Pharaoh.
the Holy Quran, Surah 66, Ayah 11. He mentions the wife of Pharaoh and Mary as two perfect examples of faith, and Mary, the daughter of Imran, the Holy Quran, Surah 66, Ayah 12.
Ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana latshan.
Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
A brief comparison between Zainab al-Kubra and the wife of Pharaoh would show the greatness of Zainab al-Kubra's position. In the Holy Quran, the wife of Pharaoh has been recognized as an example of faith for both men and women until the end of time. But just compare the wife of Pharaoh, who had faith in Moses' prophethood and had been enchanted by his guidance, with Zainab al-Kubra. When she was tortured by Pharaoh, according to narrations and historical texts, she passed away due to the torture she suffered. She was frustrated by the physical pain. She said, "O my Lord, build for me, in nearness to you, a mansion in the garden, and save me from Pharaoh and his doings." The Holy Quran, Surah 66, Ayah 11. In fact, she was praying for her death. "And save me from Pharaoh and his doings." This was while her problem was only the physical torture. Unlike Zainab al-Kubra, she had not suffered the loss of several brothers, two children, and many of her relatives and nephews. She had not watched her dear ones go to the battlefield where they were supposed to be killed. Asiya, the wife of Pharaoh, did not have to endure the psychological pains that Zainab al-Kubra went through.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.